Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Podcast. And I do mean around the world because Ohio State is an international name when it comes to major college football. My co-pilot for this week, once again, Spencer Holbrook, my trusted co-pilot. You agree with what I just said, correct?
Correct.
Okay, that's the way you're supposed to answer your captain when he's flying the plane. Yes, yes, Your Highness, you are correct. You can use Your Highness in there if you want to a little bit. But the bottom line is, Spencer, Ohio State comes out with its first big test in the Big Ten, the B1G10, and passes with flying colors, a reputed heavyweight in the Big Ten, Wisconsin. I'd like to put them on the scale again, man, see if they did come up to that heavyweight or for a little bit more of a light heavyweight after that game. But the bottom line is Ohio State prevailed 52-21. It was a runaway win from the start. And yet you look at the polls on Sunday, both major polls, the Associated Press and the coaches poll, and you see Ohio State stayed exactly at three behind Georgia and Alabama. Georgia, which had some struggles against Kent State, for sure. Go back and watch that game. And then Alabama, just doing its Alabama thing. We all remember when Ohio State barely beat a Notre Dame 21-10 in the season opener, wins by double digits and drops in the polls. I guess reciprocation is not what the polls are all about, especially when two SEC teams are at the top, right?
Yeah, Tim. It's always interesting to me to watch the Alabama-Georgia kind of annual climb up the polls while Ohio State just stays behind. It's always interesting. I'll just keep it at that, Tim, because it's almost like those voters go in and they only rank 3 through 25. They don't really put any thought into 1 and 2. And just because, you know, they're below the Mason-Dixon line, there's no consideration to Ohio State for that number one or number two slot. But I think Ohio State got 4 first place votes, so that's more than they got last week. And, you know, I don't think anybody inside the Woody Hayes Athletic Center really cares about the polls. They're fun for us to talk about, but I don't think Ryan Day's doing anything other than maybe putting it up as bulletin board material.
Yeah. Ryan Day didn't see the polls come out on Sunday afternoon and go, "What?" That's probably never left his mouth, except maybe, you know, looking at that Wisconsin game and seeing the Badgers with their number one running back and number one offense still on the field in the fourth quarter, just so he could get his, so to speak. That was an interesting development. Braylon Allen did get over 100 yards, about 70 of them on one play. So they still have that bragging right going for him. But bottom line is that was, for three quarters, that was about as a beat down as you can get in the Big Ten play, right?
Yeah, and the first 20 minutes in particular, when Ohio State just absolutely wrestled away any hope that Wisconsin had. You know, this was a pretty confident, if you read the headlines, a pretty confident Wisconsin bunch heading into the horseshoe, and Ohio State had no issue just completely dominating, taking any hope away and running away with that thing relatively early.
Ooh, no issue in the horseshoe. That could have been Buckeyes have no issue in the horseshoe with whiskey. That could have been the headline. But we digress. Bottom line is, as you look around the country, you just mentioned a while ago, it's more like the voters are interested on 4 through 25, really, because they've got Ohio State pretty much pegged there at that number three spot. And I'm just wondering, before we get into my conversation with Matt Wilhelm, my semi-regular guest on here, and he does a great job, and obviously we pre-recorded my conversation with him, but bottom line is he does it again this week. We talk about all kinds of things, including the polls. But who is your fourth best team in the country right now? I mean, when you look at the fact that Michigan struggled with Maryland, I mean, definitely struggled with Maryland. I keep telling people Maryland's better than a lot of people think going into this year based on the improvements they've made on both sides of the ball from a personnel standpoint and getting a few guys back from last year who were injured. But who is your number four?
I still think it would be Michigan, just based on whether that's – it's probably based on preseason expectation more than the results, because, you know, that Maryland win wasn't always pretty, but they were able to get it done and handle that game there at the end. You could argue Clemson because, you know, they went on the road and beat a Wake Forest team that I think is pretty good, but Clemson's got a lot of issues in the secondary and on offense. So right now I would keep Michigan there, but I'm interested to see what Michigan does when facing another real team this week in Iowa, because, you know, Iowa can't score on anybody, but they can turn you over. And J.J. McCarthy's a young quarterback on the road, going to be thrown into a secondary that is, you know, going crazy with turnovers throughout the first part of the season. So does it get dicey for the Wolverines on the road? I don't know, but, you know, we'll see if Jim Harbaugh sticking with Cade McNamara to start the season was warranted based on whether J.J. McCarthy can handle Kinnick Stadium on Saturday. So they're four right now, but, you know, that could change if we talk this time next week.
Yeah, the most offensive thing Iowa's got going for them right now is their defense. And it's crazy. Here comes Rutgers. We're going to talk about Rutgers on the flip side a little bit after my conversation with Matt Wilhelm. And Matt Wilhelm and I, like I said, I just hit him up with that question about the polls also, just to see from a former player standpoint, a guy played on the national championship team in 2002, started linebacker, was on a Super Bowl winning team in the NFL in the years he was in the NFL now, and has been a keen observer of the game and of Ohio State games in particular. Very, very fired up, as he'll tell you again, about seeing number 35 running around out there, the number 35 jersey running out there, one of those heat-seeking missiles. You know, I think for the Ohio State defense, Tommy Eichenberg, you know, I'm thinking maybe they're going to change the name of this defense based on the way it's played the first several weeks. Instead of the silver bullets, the silver missiles. What do you think? I think that's got a good ring to it.
Yeah, they look really good. And I don't know what you want to call them. I think I'm going to call them top 20 right now, because that's what they are in scoring defense. And they're going to continue to – or total defense, not scoring defense. They're going to continue to get better and rise. And, you know, it's not going to surprise me to see them after this week in the top 15 or even top 10, because I don't think Rutgers can move the ball on these guys. So – It's a unit that's going to continue to get better. It's a unit that's going to continue to get healthier in the secondary particularly. And they've got a chance to be pretty special, Tim. This defense is starting to blow me away, even as somebody who was high on them coming into the year. I'm even getting impressed.
Interesting. Well, hey, let's get to my conversation with Matt Wilhelm, and we'll be back. You and I will have some closing thoughts. Oh, my goodness. Always a pleasure to have my next guest on, Matt Wilhelm, former linebacker at The Ohio State University, a national champion there. Former linebacker in the National Football League, a Super Bowl champion there. Matt Wilhelm, welcome back to the Tim May Podcast.
Always great to be on with you, Tim. Was great to see you down there on the sideline as the team was running out on Saturday night.
Yes, it was, man. It was what an atmosphere, you know. And, boy, you know, the game against Toledo was pretty cool at night in the shoe. I got to be honest with you. I like night games. I like them a lot better now that I'm not a deadline newspaper reporter anymore, where we had to write stories and then we had to rewrite stories, blah blah blah. But I love that atmosphere the other night. I'm not a big fan of the all black uniforms, and we'll get into that in a minute, one way or the other. But I wanted to touch this with you before we get into it, Matt. Ohio State, but as convincing a win as Ohio State has had against Wisconsin, there have been a lot of them, including that 59-0 thumping back in 2014 on the way to the national championship. But here's Georgia escapes a battle with Kent State, Alabama, you know, who cares? And Ohio State stays number three in the polls. Your former player, you kind of paid little attention to that as the years went on, but as a season went on, but maybe near the end. But just what's your take? I mean, you know, Ohio State dropped a spot when it was early in the year when it won its opener against Notre Dame 21-10, and then it has about as convincing a win as you can have to open the season and stays static. I mean, what's your take on that?
I think it's truthfully, I mean, coming from a locker room player perspective, the coaches and the managers within the football program are, you know, deviating you from reading the news articles, whether good or bad, right? Yeah. To get you right back on in the machine to prepare for your next week. And going back to 2002, you know, of course, because we had the result everybody's looking for in a national championship, you know, we started somewhere low 13. And just kind of like, and it was really just continue week after week to prove yourself.
Yeah.
And I know that today's day and age with social media, with the amount of access that people have to rankings and the players have, you could, gosh, I could have not picked up your articles because it was so, we were so reliant on a newspaper. Whereas now your phone is in your pocket or in your hand with, you know, five different social media channels all saying either, as I mentioned, how great you are or how bad you played, even as a player or as a team. So it's really unique. I think a lot of it at this point is just more so for the fans. It's more so for the media pundits such as yourself across the nation to kind of see, you know, where does everybody fall in line? But here's the thing. The reason why I believe going back to our win over Notre Dame and, you know, Georgia's, you know, jumping us from 3-2, I think a lot of it had to do with the way in which Georgia looked against what was supposed to be a Pac-10, Pac-12
contender,
top team contender in Oregon.
Yes.
And I do think that some people, and, you know, Feinbaum said it ahead of our Notre Dame game. I think the jury was a little bit out on Notre Dame, and everyone was a little surprised by them being a top five team. And we saw that the week after us, they lose to Marshall. Cal, which is probably a middle of the road Pac-12 team, plays them tough.
Yeah.
At home, it was kind of dicey a little early against North Carolina, a middle of the road ACC team. So the truth has kind of come out, and I know that was it's week by week, but you know, getting to the way in which we play, I think having the opportunity to be down in the, you know, in double A right behind the Ohio State bench, these guys are so focused on the task at hand, meaning beating Wisconsin, and even more so. That's the, you know, the 10,000 foot view. That's the macro, right?
Yeah.
The micro is winning my one-on-one battle. If I'm the offensive lineman, or I'll say the O-line versus their D-line, or our wide receivers versus their DBs, you know, and so on. And defensively, getting pressure on their quarterback, taking their run game away, which we did for probably three quarters until, you know, we start to speckle in, you know, some of the twos on defense. And it just, we are so laser focused on winning our battles, meaning position groups, and dominating the guy that we're across from down in, down out, series to series. And I got to see it probably for the closest since I've been a player on the sideline at Ohio State. And it's just the communication between player coach, meaning offensive line to their coach, Coach Day and Stroud, if it results in a punt or results in a touchdown, they're talking about, and it's not just, hey, good job. They're talking about a protection on a specific blitz when the Sam walked up and came off the edge.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I saw one thing and you thought I should have called the other thing. It's like they are meticulously
adjusting
towards adjusting and working towards perfection.
Yeah.
And so and up to this point, you know, they have not disappointed. They're 4-0. They've got, again, another opportunity against Rutgers. And I think the challenge for them is to, I think, truthfully, not buy into their ranking, because if you're undefeated when it matters, it'll all take care of itself. But you got to do it every Saturday.
Yeah.
I think they're meticulously trying to perfect. And we talked about this probably after Notre Dame when we were last on, knowing that we had Arkansas and Toledo. And again, this big, you know, Big Ten challenge at night, to where, how can we be our best in the games when it really matters?
Yeah.
And now every game matters, but you know what I'm saying? When it's Penn State, when it's what we think we're going to get from Michigan State, what we thought we were going to get from Wisconsin. And of course the game against the team up north, it's not, we got to win the games we're supposed to win.
Yeah.
But I think this team is, and I thought Ryan Day and his, you know, the Big Ten opening conference talked about just, there's a focus about this group because the standard at Ohio State is so high, and losing two football games and winning a Rose Bowl, while it's great to celebrate, especially the way that we beat Utah, it's just not good enough.
Yeah.
And these guys have a mission much bigger than winning a Rose Bowl.
Well, do you remember though, man, back when you guys won the national championship 2 years earlier, y'all went, I think you were on that team. Weren't you on the, you were on the 99 team, weren't you? Were you a freshman?
Yeah, 6-6, no bowl game.
No bowl game. To where now the standard is, if you don't get to the national championship game and or maybe win it, wow, Jack, you just put in stark reality there what happened, right? I mean, the standard is ridiculous now.
It is, and it's ridiculous high. I think for Bama, I'll say it's really down to say five schools probably this year.
Yeah,
USC, Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, and USC are probably now the front runners to be the four teams that make the college football playoff. If any of them has a hiccup and loses a football game, regardless of who it's against, whether it's Vanderbilt or Auburn for Bama, or whether it's Georgia Tech in a rivalry game, or
Clemson, Clemson this past week, Wake Forest,
But I think what's a factor is and this is where you talk about rising or falling in the rankings. It's survival in some cases, because you're getting everyone's best effort each and every week. So it's survive and move on. And it's like, as much as we want to celebrate this win over Wisconsin, like, our guys are going to watch this film and it's going to be flushed down the toilet, and we are on to Rutgers, and they're trying to replicate that same success. But I think what also matters in the college football play is if you lose, when you lose. And I won't use Ohio State losing, because I know fans and listeners and the followers of your podcast will be like, well, why did you use Ohio State? I'll just say Georgia. Say Georgia loses this week. Okay. They drop from 2 to 8 because, Tennessee and Clemson and USC and Ohio State will all bump up a spot. So they'll drop to 8 or 9.
Yeah.
But if from that point forward, if they play the most dominant football and blow everybody else out, beat Bama in the SEC championship game, they are absolutely in the college football playoff.
Yeah.
And I would say the same. And again, just to use that. So say Ohio State loses to Rutgers, but then we go undefeated. We blow Michigan out. We represent the Big Ten East and blow out whoever we play in the Big Ten championship game. Ohio State's in. So it's also when you lose. And I think that's what happened last year. You looked at, losing to Oregon would not have been anything had we taken care of business up at the state up north, and then gone to the Big Ten championship, likely been favored significantly by 2 touchdowns. Win that, we're in the college football playoff. It's when you lose and how you win and lose that matter in those big games.
You know, Ohio State guys, though, man. I mean, you refer to it. You even stumble. Is it the team up north or the state up north? And the funny thing about it is you can't say that word, and yet you can say Michigan State. I mean, what's up with that?
Well, dude,
they should be toting the other team up north. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is me. I stumble upon it because it's not natural for me to say, but I do it for your listeners and for your subscribers, right? And I do it for the fans, right? I do it because I know they do it every single day because they are on a whole nother level. For me, I could openly say that word and write that word without having to put an X where the M is, because it just takes me it's a longer text. They have to go find the emoji for the X. So it's you want them to be good. As much as I want them to lose, I want them to be good, because for so long that game meant nothing, in the 10-year run of, with Tressel and Urban. Yeah. And so you want them to be good, because if you win that game, you are deserving of whatever comes thereafter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just like last year, they were quite deserving when they beat Ohio State. They were quite deserving to go on and win the Big Ten championship like they did, and then play in the college football playoff. I want to touch on this with you real quick before we talk specifically about Ohio State. Is there a team, have you seen enough nationally? Is there a team out there that really just, you go, wow, now that's a, other than Ohio State, I think Ohio State's a fairly complete football team right now based on Bone Evans. We'll get in a minute. But is there another team out there? Alabama's shown some flaws, obviously, against Texas.
Yeah, I would say to answer your question, I would say the only other team that I think is complete offensively and defensively and special teams is Georgia.
Yeah.
Because of what you said, I watched the Bama Texas game. Their offensive line, and it's a lot to do with how much turnover they've had. They lose multiple offensive line to the first, second, and third round of the NFL draft. Use two receivers every single year, to the first or second round of the NFL draft. You lose your running backs to the NFL draft every year, and you lose your defenders, but you got that pipeline is so full. So I think their inability to throw the ball consistently and have guys wide open, which is what they're so used to because they're just superiorly, they're coached differently, and they've got five-star talent.
Yeah.
So I think that and their offensive line, because they can't run the ball the way they want to run the ball and or throw the ball, where Bryce Young's relying on his athleticism a little bit more, you know, by being that plus athlete who can absolutely, you know, beat you with his arm too. And they won with that in those games. I think I watched USC, a little bit of USC last week when they had that night game. I don't remember who they played. Fresno State. Yes, yes. I like Lincoln Riley's creativity offensively. They got tested this week by somebody, and it was closer than everybody expected. I think Clemson, as you said, I've watched Clemson. I followed Clemson. I think they're not the Deshaun Watson, Dabo Sweeney era of Clemson football. So I think they – but yet they play in a – and I'm not trying to say that the Big Ten's up right now either. But they're playing in the ACC, which is a lot like the Big Ten, where there's just a couple of good teams and everybody else is just got to be ready, because you could be on upset alert if you don't bring your A game, but you should go out there with your talent and game plan and coaching and roll. But I would say Georgia, because I've watched Georgia, Oregon. I watched Georgia, I think a couple of weeks ago too. And I think they defensively after, you know, they had, I think they broke Ohio State's record or maybe Bama's record of having the most players drafted in the NFL, in one NFL draft in one season. I think like 18 dudes.
Yeah.
Nine of which were on defense, or if not all 11, I don't know. It seems like all 11, but they are as good with new names that have yet to become stars on defense as they were last year when you kind of knew everybody's name. Yeah. And then I think, you know, returning Bennett and, you know, having great skill at, you know, four-star, five-star receivers at every position that reloads, like Ohio State, like Bama, they're the most complete team.
Yeah.
And I like Kirby Smart. So I would say Georgia's the only one as of now, because I didn't watch any of the Kent State games. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how that game, that's the one thing I like to watch, is not just look at the score and look at the stats, but the game flow. You know, is it a block punt? Is it a fumble, you know, going in, you know, where it really should have been another score? Did you turn the ball over twice in the red zone? Because that should have equate to two more touchdowns or at least, you know, two field goals for a team like that against Kent State.
Yeah, and Kent State, though, did a pretty good job of, you know, basically hitting them on the edge.
They made them work.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the defense is that good. Don't attack the whole defense. Attack where there are fewer guys, you know. It took the Mexican Army a long time to figure that out at the Alamo, but that's another.
How do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time.
One bite at a time. Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, and be sure to chew it. moving on to Ohio State. The last time we were on, you were gushing about Tommy Eichenberg wearing that coveted 35 jersey.
Nothing's changed.
Defensively, this was a team that on paper was supposed to come in here and, you know, be physical, attack these guys, give them that test. You know, anybody can see this is – anybody could see watching video of Wisconsin before it showed up. This is not – should not be confused with the Wisconsin team from a couple, 3 years ago.
Right.
This is a – I don't know what – if this is a team in flux or if a team in development, whatever you want to call it. Not quite there. Let's just put it that way. But,
sure.
You know, now four games in to the Jim Knowles era – everybody was wondering, can this 4-2-5 hold up against a power, quote, power running team? And like you said, until Wisconsin left their starters in there and Ohio State had their backups in there in the fourth quarter,
it was under 150 yards.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the kid got 70 yards on one run to get over 100 just so they could keep their bragging with it. Your take on this defense and its second real physical test of the year, Notre Dame being the first one. But sure. What's your take?
I think two words that may be the same and or different than I said coming out of Notre Dame is I think they're violent and physical.
Yeah.
And the violence is what's so great to see, because it answers all those questions everybody had about the 4-2-5, which perceived on paper is a softer, more defensive back type of shell.
Yeah.
But yet somehow, some way, because the players within the scheme, those four down and those two, you know, including Tommy Eichenberg, you know, Steel Chambers, are just so violent. I also think – so I think I'll go front to back. Defensive line, because I got to see, you know, the games played, you know, one half of the 50-yard line, like right in front of us when you're sitting in such great seats. The defensive line is no longer reading, meaning engaging with a blocker and reading where the ball is going and then having to disengage and potentially impact the play or make the play. which then is has a domino effect for a backer like Eichenberg, where Eichenberg looks like he's flying around and free on almost every play, which means the defensive line's doing their job. There are almost every, even on a true rundown, they look like they're attacking the passer, but they're actually attacking the run game. So it's like they're attacking their gaps. They're getting extension. They're getting off blocks, being extremely disruptive. That's the violence. That's the physicality that I just talked about, which, as I just mentioned, as I moved to the second layer, onto the domino effect of keeping your backers clean. And what I love to see as a, you know, former backer and student of the game is how you can tell how much study these guys have put into their opponent because of the amount of anticipation and their ability to diagnose and run to football, not shuffle, you know, not, you know, move and take your read and then move. It's like it hits. And it's like, they're like a missile. And that's Eichenberg, that's Chambers, that's Simon when he's called upon. I think Josh Proctor, you know, was like a missile, you know, the other night. And it's so great to see because that's the silver bullet defense that we all have become so used to seeing, you know, our squad on, you know, and for another 10, 15 years before me, when that started, 10 to 15 years after me. And there's been some lulls here and there, but that's to be expected. I just think they're extremely prepared. They're well coached, they're violent, they're physical, and only maybe that 70-yard run, and I think it was just that busted coverage on that first touchdown when it looked like mild miscommunication on who was going to carry the vertical, but the play got a little extended. The guy got out right and found, you know, the player behind multiple defenders. So they all kind of sucked up on the low and they let one kind of trickle behind it, which is what led to their first touchdown. But otherwise, extremely dominant. And I think when you can move down the field and go get a touchdown on your home field, it's, you know, demeaning to a row team. Then you get the football, you turn it over, they go score. And you're, I mean, no matter who you are, whether it's Michigan, Georgia, Bama, whoever, you're down 14-0 on the road against the number three team in the country.
Yeah.
That's not easy. That's and I think it was a snowball effect that just led to offense consistency with Stroud in the run game. And then, you know, defensively, even more so now, pinning their ears back and being able to go attack a spot, which is where their quarterback sets, and really not worrying about the run until the game was technically over.
Yeah. And, you know, and going back to your premise, your original premise there too, what's impressed me, and this may not be across the board every play, but with their four down linemen, sometimes just three down linemen, I'm talking about Ohio State.
Yeah.
I'm rarely seeing a two gap, you know, a two gap guy. Yeah. I'm seeing, like you said, I'm seeing guys getting a foot up the field, attacking a gap. I'm talking about defensive linemen. And then the linebackers, like you said, quick to react to where the point of attack is, but not overrunning. Being very disciplined, in my opinion, Steel Chambers and Tommy Eichenberg, about where they're going, knowing where the funnel is, so to speak, on that defense. But I just, man, I if I was to coach defense, I would coach it like this. I mean, that would be my defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is aggressive. It's almost like a full court press in basketball from the standpoint of nobody really gets a break. But what really stands out is how often you see offensive linemen having to turn, you know, kind of get out of what I call attack mode. And, oh, my God, that guy just got by me, you know.
I think that's the way – when you think about football as a core, you think, you know, what are the advantages of the offense is, A, you know where the play's going.
Yeah.
And you have the snap count, right? So you have that anticipation and having been an offensive coach at the youth level and having, you know, played – you know, running back in high school and being a running back, when color flashes quick, you know, and you're a running back because of, you know, they're getting in the gaps, and you don't know where to take the football or where the gaps are going to be or where, you know, the hole, it's designed to have a hole show up this way, right? Because of a down block and a pull and a trap or whatever you want to call it. And when it's not there and the opposite color is showing up in your hole, it's, you stutter your feet, you start to second guess, you know, what's going on in front of you. And I think that's the disruption, you know, that, and I even furthermore, it's like, you know, Wisconsin tried to do it to us without great success, but, you know, we're late in the cadence. We're also like shifting, you know, so we might show you know, a three and a five, you know, and a five technique on the backside. And then, as you, you know, blue 88, and then it's like, bam, we're moving down. We're moving down to a one and a three. And then we're going to, you know, we're walking up the jackbacker and bringing him off the edge. And so it's that anticipation that's just, again, while we do that, while we're violent, while we're playing physical and we're disruptive, it's just for a team that wants to run the football, you take it away. And then you allow what we have on our defensive line to pin their ears back and know that they're going to, there's an 80% chance they're going to throw. You're attacking that spot. Yeah. And it allows the defensive backs, you know, some to not have to fit the run and play 50-50 run pass. It allows you to be so much more cognizant of your coverage and responsibilities that, you know, you can break on the ball, you know, that beat faster because you've taken away the run game responsibility.
Yeah. And the other thing stands out, like you said, discipline and disruptive. I mean, the that combo is when you can get it going against a Wisconsin, which has lived forever on that cutback in the gap. Yeah. You know what I mean? That cutback by the running back. Boom, it wasn't there. You know, it was like this gap was covered, that gap was covered because this guy's kept his gap responsibility. It's a beautiful thing to watch. And I know for a defensive guy like you, I mean, you're just, going crazy. I want to ask you this. Offensively, the last two games, the Arkansas State game had its hits and misses, and I think Arkansas State, by the way, was more talented across the board than some people gave him credit because of all the talent they brought in there. They were pretty big and they were pretty quick. But it's been a long time since I've seen an offense this, I don't know, this in sync right out of the gate two games in a row, Matt. And what do you see that you just really like about Ohio State's offense right now besides the obvious?
Well, I think I alluded to it early kind of in the intro is, you know, we were in the third row right behind the offensive line on the bench. So about the 30-yard line, right where the offensive line comes. Yep. So after every drive, they all come over, they take their helmets off. And it was Coach Alford coming over, confirming something on protection. It was Travion Henderson coming over, confirming something on protection or talking through it. It was Stroud almost after every single drive, not only talking to Coach Day, you know, talking to his coach, it was coming over, talking to the linemen, Paris Johnson and Jones and, you know, Weipler about what did you see? Why'd you turn this way? Because I thought this and this is why I called that. And they're actively going back to actively chasing perfection to protect their asset, which is CJ Stroud, because if they know if they give him a clean pocket and with the guys that we have running routes, it's unstoppable. I mean, for the fact of the matter, if he has time, because we have four or five star, you know, receivers that are now developing into NFL level talent, getting open against inferior opponents, Arkansas State, Toledo, Rutgers, Wisconsin. Eventually they'll get tested, right? But for right now, we've got superior talent going against inferior coverage. We get amazing protection and a Heisman Trophy candidate delivering the football. It's just, they are in sync. I think I love the fact Coach Day is running much more of a pro style offense than a true spread. The one thing that I was going to hit on, if we were going to talk D the whole time, I was going to bring this up, but you brought up offenses. I love, and this is not to take anything away from him, but, and I'm not looking to try to replace him, but like, I love the tight end usage in our offense with Cade Stover.
Yeah.
Running those verticals, stressing those safeties, finding those voids in the coverages, because for the longest time, we had guys doing it, but the ball never went there.
Yeah.
You know, with Ruckert and Stoneburner and, gosh, who's the guy in between them that's playing?
Yeah, the kid in Jacksonville. Yeah, the direct draft pick. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know exactly what I'm saying. It's like, so we've had four or five-star talent that in most cases have just been, you know, motioning across and help seal the edge and maybe leak out on a late block. But now we're actually using them as a part of the offense. So it's not, you know, Igukpa and Jackson Smith and Jigba and Fleming and Marvin Harrison and Henderson and Mayan Williams, you now have to cover our tight end and Stroud will deliver the football. So that football can go to any five guys on any given offensive play. And that stresses a defense out. And I just love, if I'm a tight end, who's a junior somewhere in the country who might be considered in Georgia because they've got two five-star dudes that are balling, right? That are great athletes that are going to be first-round picks.
Yeah.
You look at what Ohio State's doing with their tight ends in their offense with Cade Stover specifically, and you go, I got to give these guys a look because Ryan Day is doing something different, and they've not done this way a long time.
Let me ask you this. You play defense at every level. that you can play in football. When you take a tight end like a Cade Stover, 6'5", 260, 265, whatever his weight is, and you put him not – you don't slot him. You put him all the way to the edge of the formation. He was almost on the one time he was almost – it looked like he was almost on the Wisconsin bench. You know what I mean? A few times. Sure. What does that do to a defense? I mean, what does it do for – you've prepared for A, now you're getting G. You know what I mean?
Sure. What? So, so to answer your question, so first of all, what has to happen is, A, who normally covers a tight end in coverage? If it's man, it's either it's usually a linebacker because they're so used to being attached to a formation, you know, on the end line on one side or the other, maybe even off in a wing, or even if they're just, you know, in a baby flex, it's still an inside backer, right? He's got him in some type of zone coverage or a man. Yeah. But when you move him out, what you do is you force either a safety to pass their coverage or responsibility to a backer or the other safety, which means you have to like basically go from like it's basically forcing communication by the defense. And we're already hard to cover, we already have great protection, and we've got a Heisman Trophy candidate, you know, as our quarterback, and you're confused.
Yeah. Wow.
Look out. So then you not only line them wide to force that pre-snap communication, then what do? We motion him in.
Yeah.
Do we half motion him in? Does he motion in back to in line in a wing position, or does he motion all the way across?
Yeah.
And so every stop that he could make in that motion is forcing another like flowing communication amongst the defense.
Yeah.
And so while we're worrying about the motion, you've got Marvin Harrison running a route. You've got, you know, Igukpa running this. You've got it. And it's like, or we do it and he motions all the way through and we're just snapping the ball while the linebacker's thinking, oh, I've got Stover in coverage. You got Travion Henderson coming off the zone block right at you. And, I got a fit now too.
Yeah.
So it's the best way to answer. It's stress, communication, communicate. And it's more, and then it becomes confusion. So we're not only better than you, but we're confusing you with our looks, with our formations, with our motions. And it's just in some cases look too easy.
Yeah. I mean, they ran routes with him from wide. One of my favorite things was they did that, and all of a sudden they come back and they have Ekbuka come across the in motion across the back, and they throw a little swing out there. Now they've got a 2-on-1 or basically 2-on-2 wide screen where he got a pretty good yardage chunk. I'm talking with Cade Stover out there.
Yeah. One
of the blockers. Yeah. I mean, you talk about delving into a playbook. Real quick for you,
even a touchdown down the goal line, like that is a Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews concept.
Yeah,
we bring in goal line, right, with Stover. We go two back, we fake the lead. You know, Stroud has, who's usually never under center, has an amazing fake. You know, holds the ball long enough. 1-1000, 2-1000. Stover lets the guys go, gets to the corner of the end zone. Two guys come up on Stroud, throws it right over the head. It's toying with the defense.
It's stunning. That's what I always I said this to Marvin Harrison Jr. A couple of weeks ago when he had a couple of deep balls, you know, he caught, and he put on a clinic that day. But it's stunning how in modern football you still could just shake guys wide open by just basic schoolyard kind of, or backyard kind of tactics. You know, I'm just going to stand here and act like I'm blocking, but boom, I release and I'm wide open in a big time game against a big time opponent. I mean, it's real quick before you go.
Sure.
I don't know. How impressed are you by the scheming that's going on by Ryan Day and his staff though? Because we talked about it at LettermanRow.com this week too. It's every week there's something really new. But then it's not just one thing. It's they show you that, and then they have other things.
Yeah, tangential. They're layering the offense.
Yeah, yes. I mean, you know, like the out formation 2 weeks ago, and then the other night. I mean, with the wide, with the tight end, and all. I mean, you go, well, you know, they've got more coming, right? But I mean, how crazy would that be right now for a defense to be preparing for this team from a tendency standpoint?
It's difficult. It really is. And you have to, I think in some cases, you know, off the cuff, if I were a defensive coordinator, you don't stop anything. You just try to limit it. Right.
Yeah.
And then you really have to play, you know, if your defense is limiting our offense, your offense better be moving the football, you know, and potentially getting some points, because you know eventually Ryan Day and his staff will figure it out. They've got the talent to get the guys open, and then they're going to make that one big play and boom. And I also would say, to kind of put a bow on your question and this conversation, I think offensively what's so refreshing, and again, you're there covering it each and every week and in that building, is I love from afar, and even then, you know, touching and going as I come down for games, and seeing how little ego there is on offense.
Yeah.
Because when you have a stable between, you know, Mayan Williams don't care if Travion runs for $150, and Travion don't care if Mayan Williams runs for $150. And Marvin Harrison has his day, then Agukpa has his day. Then you get Cade Stover has a day. And it's like, that's just, and there's, and you look at what, I mean, how blessed we were last year to have, you know, Olave and Garrett Wilson and Jackson Smith and Jigba. Like, there was no hate as I'm Olave or Wilson, you know, propelling myself into the National Football League, and I want to ball as much as I can, because the more that I ball, the more money I make, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you've got Ajigba, you know, a true sophomore, redshirt, whatever he was, you know, he was a true sophomore last year, correct?
Yeah.
You know, balling, even, you know, 320 yards receiving in the bowl game or whatever it was, you know what I mean? Essentially stealing the shine off of these guys. And who is he celebrating first with when he scores or balls or points first down is his brothers.
Yeah.
You know, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave. And I think that's something that's very special about this team. I think it's a testament to what Coach Day has created in that building. I think it's a testament specifically in that room to what Brian Hartline's been able to do. What he, I don't want to say sells, that's the wrong word. What he conveys to these folks when he's in their, you know, in their living rooms as sophomores and juniors. And then what they guarantee and follow through with when they actually get them on campus is the development, the brotherhood. Again, I was at the game with my son, you know, was able to, you know, he's a freshman. He's not being recruited, but he was on the recruit list, partially because I'm his dad and he is a high school age. Right.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, on the lanyard that they give you with your pass, it's brotherhood, tough love, and developed here.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the brotherhood, because even if I don't make it, I've got these brothers that I went to war with for 4, 5, 6 years, you know, from the coaches and from the, from schooling, it's, you're going to get tough love. It's like, I love you, but it's like, it's all because I'm trying to make you better. And then you have, you know, the perfect recipe to be able to develop you, so that develop you for the business world, develop you to go get a job, or develop you to go play at the next level in the National Football League.
Yeah.
And I think it's very unique. Are there more than just Ohio State doing it and doing it this way? Yes, but we can count those schools on our hand.
Yeah. Hey, well, my last question. You're a defensive coordinator now. You've seen what Ohio State is all about offensively. What is one thing you definitely try to get done? Like Greg Schiano sitting there studying this offense right now and Rutgers. What is one area you try to attack? Obviously, you've got to affect the quarterback. I mean, that's got – but how do you do that? I mean, what is one thing you think you could attack to at least put Ohio State on its heels a little bit? What would you do, Matt?
Well, I think personally, if I'm running some type of four-man front, I would never bring any more than five defenders. And what I would – and even some cases, I would try to put – is drop seven or eight, you know, because I don't think that you can realistically or consistently get to CJ Stroud. It's just too difficult. And the mix of run pass, I want to make CJ Stroud work.
Yeah.
Right. Because the only success you may have is when he doesn't have his first read or second read, you know, by then you hope your defensive line and or that added backer that I just talked about, you know, bringing five, is you hope that they're winning and popping off of that block enough to maybe chase down CJ Stroud, get him off his spot, get him a little uncomfortable. And of course he makes great decisions, you know, on the roll, rolling out of bounds, extending the play. You know, we saw that the Mayan Williams catch, you know, against Notre Dame. It was a broken down, non-ideal situation. He leaked out, he popped open, delivered the ball, actually rolling to his left, not his right. And it was a perfect football. Mayan Williams makes the catch, first down, you know. So, but you've got to get CJ Stroud uncomfortable. And how do you do that? I think the mix and match of, you know, rushing three or four, dropping seven or eight, adding a defender here or there, you know, giving him different look, you know, pre-snap looks, and then even post-snap looks, you know, rolling it. But it's not easy to do. It's not easy to do when you don't have elite talent with elite coaches. It's just hard because, and I say this a lot, and sometimes, you know, the novice football fan, I go on any play that essentially, if I can know the defense it's being run, on any given play, I can tell you the culprit, which, you know, who's at fault or has the mental error or out of his gap or takes a bad misstep in coverage or his eyes were looking at the wrong thing and he gets stressed by another vertical. You can find the culprit on every single play on why any play goes for 8 yards or more.
Yeah.
There's one out there. And Ohio State can identify that, you know, because of the double count on offense. And then you have elite talent that makes up for, and they just find that guy. And then when they find him, they abuse it.
Dude, real quick, are you on Twitter at all? Did you see the did you see the video of Ken Dorsey losing it?
I did.
Offensive coordinator for the Bills. I think you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Yes, I saw it.
Did you have just what went on in your brain? Was it that blitz you came off and just knocked him into tomorrow? I know, you know, I don't mean it, you know, in a
savage
kind of way, but
more,
oh my goodness,
so than
he hadn't been right since then, has he? Go ahead.
No, he has not. And neither has the entire, they lost Tennessee State, so they're not even back yet.
Yeah.
2002.
Yeah.
But you know what actually went through my brain, to be honest with you? It wasn't anything to do with Ken Dorsey and, you know, that hit or that game or whatever. It was how many times that I've been either a flag football, a youth football, or a high school football coach. And something like that happens that's uncontrollable.
Yeah.
When your players kind of don't make the right decision and it blows your mind and you throw your clipboard in the air or you throw the whiteboard in your air, or you take your headset off and you slam it down on the ground because you're just in that moment, you thought you had an opportunity to potentially win a game and your players just needed to follow through and do what they were coached to do.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
Yeah. That's
kind of, and that's the frustration. And I think in that case, you know, it's week three or week four in the NFL. It's like, you know, no one's going to be the 2008 Patriots and go 17-18-0. It's like you're going to drop one to a good team. But it just also just shows how much he's invested, you know, in Josh Allen, how much the Bills are invested because their Super Bowl window is open and how much is on the line against, a rebuilt Miami Dolphins football team with Mike McDaniels.
And the fine line, even against an average team in the NFL, is – it is so fine between good.
Well, dude, yeah.
I mean, winning and losing. Yeah.
If they get lined up, Josh Allen spikes the ball, and you give Josh Allen, who's, you know, him and probably Jalen Hurts are 1-2 in the MVP race through a few weeks in the season. You give him the football, you know, on the 35-yard line with 1 second left, that's an opportunity to win the game.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Wilhelm joining the Tim May podcast once again. It's always a pleasure. And, of course, we're going to do it a few more times, man. I really enjoyed having you on, man. I really appreciate you.
My pleasure. 30 minutes becomes 1 hour really quickly with us.
I know, man. It can't help it, man.
It's all good.
Exactly. But until next time, man, we'll see you then, man.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Man, always enjoy having Matt Wilhelm on my podcast. And now you know why. You know, another proof is in the pudding, so to speak, right, Spencer? But he talked about the polls and how anybody in their right mind in the Woody A's Athletic Center cares not about what the polls say here at the end of September. It's the end of November when you really want to be peaking. And obviously that comes from a guy on the 2002 team, which started that year ranked 13th in the nation and ended up winning the national championship back then, the BCS national championship. But the other thing he talked about, and you heard him, you got to be impressed with this defense now and what it's doing. We already touched on that in our previous segment, but really fired up about the way Tommy Eichenberg is running around and making plays. And like you and I talked about last week, maybe this isn't the acid test for this defense from the standpoint of playing against a physical team, because this is not one of the better Wisconsin teams of recent times, but it was still bound and determined to play Ohio State physically, and Ohio State won that battle. Just what are your thoughts, man, as you look at this defense now? You touched on it a minute ago, but where can this defense get better in your mind?
I think the big thing is obviously the corners getting healthy. And if you can get the corners healthy, you're really going to have something going here. Because, you know, we talked about it last week. You can always challenge Ohio State on the edges just because you're not going to be able to run on these guys. And they proved that against Braylon Allen on Saturday for the most part. You can't run you know, between the tackles on this defense. So you're going to have to challenge it on the outside. So if until Ohio State gets its top three corners back, maybe, you know, three of the top four corners back, I think you're going to continue to see teams try to challenge them if they even can. I'm not sure Rutgers can, and I know Wisconsin couldn't. So, you know, that's where they can get better. And then, you know, if I could just throw it out there, you know, the second team defensive line, the drop off from the first team defensive line with Mike Hall and with Teron Vincent, particularly in the middle, compared to a couple of the other guys that platoon in there, you know, I think Ty Hamilton's really stepped up and played well, but some of those other guys that are in there, I think they can elevate their play. And if you can get that second team defensive line rolling the way you can that first team, and you get the corners healthy, this defense is going to be really hard. It's going to be a tough Buckeye to crack, Tim.
Yes, tough nut to crack, aka poisonous nut, Buckeye. You know, and we talked about this last week. Caden Curry got in there earlier than in previous weeks in a Big Ten opener. Some guys are coming online, stepping up, right? I mean, Caden Curry, a defensive end, and he got in there, and he held his own. He created some havoc, just like he's supposed to do. Keep your eye on him, right?
Absolutely. He's coming, Tim. And, you know, they've been talking about him for a while. He's been building. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, he's got to earn that trust from Jim Knowles. He's got to earn that trust from Larry Johnson, Ryan Day. And once those guys feel like he can play at a high level earlier and earlier, they're going to keep creeping him in there and letting him get his toes wet. All of a sudden, they're going to throw him in the, you know, the deep end and let him go. And, you know, if a dog's going to bite, he's going to bite as a pup. And
okay, John Cooper. Okay, John Cooper. Go ahead.
Looks like Caden Curry is getting those teeth ready, because he's making the moves, Tim. We've seen it before with freshmen. Get him in there late in the game in the non-conference. Then you get him in there in the third quarter of a conference game. And then all of a sudden they're in there in the first half for a series and then three series. And then the next game they're in there with the second team. And it's that slow climb of a true freshman that's so classic, you know, at high-level college football. And Caden Curry is on that path right now. I'm not sure when that'll be complete. Maybe it's this week against Rutgers. Maybe it continues into Michigan State, or maybe even against Iowa, an offense that is really bad. You could see him work in there. So when that happens, I don't know, but I think by November you'll see 92 in there as a big part of the rotation there.
Agreed. That's what's cool about college football. You touched on it, and especially a big time program like Ohio State and Alabama, Georgia, right on down the line, the young guys, the meshing of the young with the old, and sometimes they're still planting by the young of the old as the season goes on. It's kind of cool to watch, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we saw in the opener for Georgia, you know, I don't want to get too national on you, but we saw in the opener for Georgia, Malachi Starks, a true freshman who goes in against Oregon and has an interception on a deep ball on Oregon and blew that game wide open. So, like, you know, you see Alabama, a couple of their offensive linemen are starting to make moves as really early in their career. And Ohio State, it's on the defensive line. You're seeing, you know, a Mike Hall come off a red shirt and work his way into the starting lineup. Caden Curry start. So the top of the top here in the country, Tim, they all have really high level experience and veterans and talent. But you know they're at the top when you see the true freshmen start to emerge into October. And become parts of that defense. And I think you're starting to see that at Ohio State, particularly on that defensive line.
Yeah. And then Jair Brown and J.K. Johnson making their first starts the other night and playing with aplomb, in my opinion, in place of Denzel Burke, broken hand or broken bone in his hand, needed surgery. And Cam Brown, you know, once a guy gets in there and gets his feet wet and gets experience, you never know how things are going to shake up as the year goes on. That's another thing we're looking at. I mean, they've gotten help from depth that I don't think people thought kind of existed going into this season. We all knew about J.K. Johnson. Jair Brown, you figured he was going to be a project a little bit just because, you know, how much work can he get? But, man, opportunity, the guys take advantage of it. Those two guys did. And speaking taking advantage of opportunity, Cade Stover at tight end, the more he proves he can handle in practice and in games of being a part of the passing offense, the receiving end of the passing offense, the more chances he's going to get. I think Ryan Day and company proved that again the other night. He had the game of games for him so far, four catches, two of them for touchdowns, splitting out wide, doing all kinds of things. He was definitely their wild card. And like with this offense, like I said, you know, what what do they need to really come on defensively? Four games in now, they're 4-0, a third of the season behind them. Where can this offense make a stride, in your opinion?
You know, it's tough to say. Maybe it's just a matter of getting Jaxon Smith-Njigba healthy, and then you can go from there. Maybe that's where they need to improve, is just getting him back on the field to make it even scarier. But, you know, I'd like to see G. Scott get a little more involved in the passing game and add that wrinkle. I think that's coming to the passing game. I think it's coming to the offense. You know, C.J. Stroud's getting through his progression, so there's not really an issue there. Even when he didn't have his best stuff on Saturday there in the second quarter, I think he was 1 of 5 passing in the second quarter, maybe 2 of 5, and he had the interception. You know, he still had 5 touchdowns and a lot of yards. And so I'm not sure if I can put my finger on one thing exactly, because even in the rewatch, you know, we all had those questions about DeJuan Jones being able to move around and be athletic in the open field. We had our questions about, you know, how these starting five and their new roles were going to mesh together. Well, they all look just fine, Tim. And maybe it's running back depth that they need to be concerned about. I don't know. But I don't really see a hole right now in this offense especially, and I'm not really sure how any defense plans to slow it down anytime soon.
Yeah, but just the way Ryan Day and his offensive staff just keep adding a little bit here and there, sometimes a lot here and there, you know they got more things planned. And like you and I talked about on the Monday after, and to me, just sticks in my mind is Ryan Day is really – he's not really a guy that seems to be saving things, because it's almost like he's got to get more – he's got to get to more things down the line with this offense, but he really likes, it appears to me, throwing things up on video for that next team or those next several teams to have to deal with from a preparation standpoint. Anywhere you go from there, because in the next week, if you're second in line of playing Ohio State, he's going to show you something new again the next week, right? I mean, it's like I was talking with Matt Wilhelm. How do you really attack that? From a scheme standpoint defensively, and, you know, pretty much you got to get after the quarterback if you can. You can't let them get the running game going, but then you got to cover the waterfront on the backside. That's tough to do on a consistent basis. And that's what this offense has going for it, I think, even more this year than it did a year ago. That's why I think this is going to go down, barring major catastrophic injuries, as the best offense in Ohio State history. And I don't. That doesn't mean statistically they're going to over the top running or passing like they have in the past. But the combo, anybody can see this combo working well, right?
Absolutely. And you know, you see, Cade Stover come across the formation under center and kick out block, and you know, you'll probably see a pass off of that now in the short term, or you know, in the future, you'll see, you know, that Mitch Rossi fullback handoff off the offset eye. You'll probably see a fake there and a pitch out to Travion Henderson or Mayan Williams at some point, just to keep that backside linebacker occupied. Yep. You know, you see them pitch the ball out to Travion Henderson out of the shotgun, and then the next series fake that pitch and go down the seam to Cade Stover on the sideline. I think that was in the Notre Dame game. That was Arkansas State, after seeing the pitch in the Notre Dame game. So everything you see, Tim, just from this Ohio State offense, just plan on seeing it again, but a fake of it.
Yeah, a play action of that play. Exactly. I
mean, the next time C.J. Stroud fakes a handoff and bootlegs to his right, you have to imagine that a couple of defenders are going to think twice before they creep up Cade Stover, take away Cade Stover, and then you've got C.J. Stroud's ability to run to the edge and dive at the pylon and get in there for a rushing touchdown. And so everything you've seen from this offense, I don't think they do anything on accident, Tim. I think they're just setting things up to make it so it's almost impossible to prepare for these guys. You know, you wonder what's the frustration level of even preparing for these guys? If you're Greg Schiano, if you're Scotty Hazleton, the defensive coordinator at Michigan State, if you're, Phil Parker and, Kirk Ferentz trying to prepare for these guys October 22nd. I mean, it is going to be really, really challenging for these next few opponents to try to nail down what the Buckeyes do offensively. What's their identity right now? It's toughness. It's not anything. Like, it's not shotgun, it's not pistol, it's not under center, it's not power eye, it's not run first, it's not pass first. It's simply blow people off the ball and get in the end zone. And even in the passing game, Julian Fleming runs over two guys on his way to the end zone in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
he also is laying people out trying to block. You know, Cade Stover's out there throwing blocks for the running game and then catching touchdown passes. There's no identity to this team whatsoever other than toughness. And they're doing what they want, kind of flexing on people in the process on the offensive side. It's really fun to watch right now.
Yeah, I think their identity could best be summed up as toughness and TDs. Boy, that's a tough combo. That's a tough combo to beat because touchdowns are still the silver dollar when it comes to big-time college football. Hey, Spencer, thanks for joining me again on the Tim May Podcast, man. You're a pretty good co-pilot. We had no loop-de-loops. We had no aileron rolls. You just flew that thing straight and level, man. Appreciate you.
Always appreciate you having me on here, Tim. It's always a pleasure.
And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, when we will talk a little bit about the Rutgers game, look forward to what's coming on this Ohio State schedule. Will Ohio State move in the polls? Probably not, based on what you're seeing coming down the road. But Alabama has some tests coming. That's going to be very interesting to watch from a national standpoint. But until next week, for Spencer Holbrook, this is Tim May. We will see you then.